The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, I'm exhausted after scrolling through the J1 fixture list, but all of these players are going to be feeling a lot worse in a few weeks' time once it all gets up and running.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be nice. I think J2 have definitely got it worse. There's so many midweek rounds. I mean, J1, honestly, I thought it would be worse than it is. I didn't expect, or maybe just didn't think, that they'd halve the League Cup group stage, the Levan Cup group stage. So that's at least eased some of the burden. But yeah, some of these summer months are going to be a right slog for a lot of players.
Indeed, and we've got a lot to get through this week, Sam, so I'll let you off without a K-League corner, but we'll certainly be pinning you down for some K-League updates in podcasts to come. So, yeah, ideally I would have liked to have recorded as the fixtures came hot off the presses on Monday, but with the J-League posting it at 5 o'clock and my dog needing walking and my kids needing bathing and being put to bed last night, I didn't have time to go through it all in much detail. So we've had to wait a full day, but Sam, I think we both needed that extra time to take everything in.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, K-League Corner, that's where I've been for a while. So I had to spend a couple of hours this morning just having a good look through these. There's some teams that I think will be a little more aggrieved than others, but yeah, it's just good to get these fixtures out there and we've got a basis to start with, and it really does feel like the football's coming back now.
Most definitely. And speaking of extra time, I'm very much looking forward to Stuart and John riffing on the J2 and J3 fixtures in their podcast this week, and I'm also very much looking forward to welcoming in first-time guest, Johnny Nicol. Regular listeners will know Johnny as a source of terrific questions for Sam, myself, and other guests. Well, he's also a Gumba Osaka blogger at Gumba Osaka Blog in English, and he can be found on Twitter at bloggumba and his personal account at JohnnyNicol6. Johnny, welcome to J-Talk. How are you?
Thank you very much, Ben, and thank you very much, Sam. It's great to be here, my first appearance. But hopefully, we can talk. There's a lot to talk about, so hopefully I've got something to contribute, and hopefully the listeners enjoy what we have to say.
Well, it's tremendous to have you with us, Johnny. And, well, yeah, as we usually do with first-time guests, when I remember to, of course, could you fill us in a bit on your background, how you found your way to Japan and how you fell in love with Gumba Osaka?
Oh, thanks very much. So I don't know if you can still tell from my accent. I'm from Scotland. I'm actually from a small town called Prestwick, which is about 60 kilometres south of Glasgow. I grew up supporting a team called Ayr United, who usually in the Scottish kind of Championship, League One. And then I moved to Korea initially in 2010. I lived in Incheon, so actually I took in quite a few Incheon United games when I was there against like Jeonbuk, Suwon, big teams like that. And then I came to Japan on holiday, February 2011, and I really kind of fell in love with the country. It was in like Hakone and Tokyo area. And then the following year, I ended up moving to Japan permanently, the north part of Osaka. That was in June 2012. I, like a lot of other people, I think I've maybe heard yourself saying this in the Get to Know You, or Who Are You podcast. I only plan to stay here for a year. So I didn't really get into J-League when I first came. Mm-hmm. But then as I kind of decided to stay longer, I got more and more into it. It might be a bit strange as a kind of Gamba supporter. The first game I actually watched in Japan was a Cerezo game. The Cerezo against Urawa in 2013. It was actually a very, very good game, 2-2 it finished. That year, Gamba were in J2, and my work schedule meant that I had a lot of Sundays off, and a lot of J2 games are on Sunday, so I gradually just kept going to the games, and obviously Gamba won J2 2013, they did the treble 2014, and I've followed them ever since, really.
Yeah, wow, what an introduction to the J-League. Yeah, your team starts off in J2, but then, yeah, absolutely runs the table the following season after winning the second tier. Absolutely terrific. So I guess gradually over time, as you started going more and more and, yeah, you got into, as I say, fell in love with the club, then the idea for starting a blog came about?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm quite a late convert to Twitter. I think I only started Twitter like January 2018. And it's one of these things that it seems obvious to do now, but it didn't seem then. And I kind of gradually get more and more involved with the kind of J-League English community. And I think it was last year, there was a big typhoon during the Rugby World Cup. And my work was cancelled, but it didn't really hit Osaka. So I had a bit of time not really doing much. And I thought it was a good chance. I really want to get my kind of thoughts on paper about Gamba, because they're a big club, but I felt I had a lot of things I wanted to say about the transfer policy, which hadn't been great since they won that treble in 2014. So I started up the blog, and the feedback's been really, really amazing, like from all corners of the world.
Yeah, there's quite a good community, isn't there, of these sort of English blogs about a lot of Japanese teams. I think there's various ones on Shimizu, Nagasaki, Avispa, loads of teams. So how easy has it been, how open have they been to help you get that blog off the ground?
I think a lot of people like followed it and shared. I've communicated more with kind of bloggers in J2. I know Jeff Osborne's been a guest on the show. We've done a bit of collaboration, actually. And I think the Vivar and Nagasaki guy, I've talked to a little bit there. And I think there's a new blog from the Galta Sendai. So there is a bit of like everyone's trying to help each other out. And I feel like Twitter or maybe other parts of the internet, there's often a lot of hostility in certain areas, but the JBlog community seems to be very, very open and welcoming, and that's one thing I think is really positive about it.
Yeah, well said, Johnny, and yeah, absolutely, heartily agree with that, and obviously, this podcast has been helped along the way by a lot of people, and yeah, a lot of people making themselves available, and we should all be really proud, I think, of this community, because it's it's thriving. It's absolutely terrific, and it's great to have you as part of it, and indeed, making your debut on this episode. And we've obviously got a lot to get through fixture wise with the J League are bombarding us with 33 rounds worth of J1 fixtures, and never mind everything else from J2 and J3, the Levain Cup as well, as Sam said, the abridged version of the group stage, which we'll come on to at some stage. So Sam, in our prep for this episode, we said we were going to have at least a couple of major takeaways each from the fixture release. So I guess we probably should have compared notes before we hit record, so we might have some of the same points to make. But I'll cede the floor to you. What was your first major takeaway from the J1 fixture list reveal?
Well, it's very kind of you. What I was looking at was really the first couple of fixtures, because these are the ones that we know that there's going to be no supporters in the ground. I just felt it was quite interesting when you've got the derbies that you've got. It goes to both of you, really. You've got the Gamba, Cerezo, Osaka derby the first day back, and then the following midweek, there's the Tamagawa Classico, where Tokyo hosts Kawasaki. So kind of what are your thoughts, both of you, on having to cede that home advantage in that first game against your biggest rivals, knowing that likely down the line, Cerezo will get a home game against Gamba with fans, and Kawasaki likewise against Tokyo.
Away you go, Johnny.
It's actually a very interesting point, Sam. It's one I hadn't really thought about, because essentially my mindset going into this was I had the feeling that behind closed doors games were going to continue a lot longer than it seems like they might. So I actually hadn't thought about that at all. In terms of playing Cerezo first up, I think it's going to be a very, very tough game at any stage of the season. And Gamba generally are notoriously slow starters, so I feel a bit this is similar to when they started the original season away to Yokohama F. Marinos, that if we lost this game, it's not really like 3 points dropped so much. Although Gamba have an amazing record at home to Cerezo in league games, I think Cerezo haven't won since 2003 away to Gamba. I think it might be a decent time to play Cerezo, and I think this year, really, with attendances, I think we'll probably come on to this later, it's not going to be a great year for attendances anyway, and a lot of fans are going to be missing out. So I didn't really come at it from that angle, but I think it is a very good point.
Yeah, and for me, I guess it's just one of those that can't be helped. When we knew that there were going to be, when we knew the teams were going to be grouped regionally, you obviously are going to be playing a bunch of teams from your area In the first few games back, as we'll come on to later, there's a definite divide in the early stage of the season where you're playing teams from your basically your half of the country, and then things open up. I think it's at literally the 1st of August is when that opens up. So if it was going to be, you know, if it was going to be Yokohama at home, if it was going to be Kawasaki at home, it was going to be one of those teams probably that we were going to have to play behind closed doors. I mean, the hardcore support that you know, obviously look forward to this game, and I obviously look forward to it as well, but I'm not able to go as much these days, so I wouldn't have been able to go anyway. So yeah, for them it'll sting a bit, and they obviously just have to hope that the players get up for it with the lack of atmosphere in the stadium. But I guess it's just one of those that can't be helped. You were always going to be drawn against a couple of big regional rivals at home in these behind closed doors games, and for the hardcore support it's disappointing, but yeah, you just have to move on and let the players play the games, I suppose.
I think especially as you say in that region where you've got all the Kanagawa teams, there's a derby pretty much in every game, mostly. I mean, and maybe in the kind of west where you could maybe have allowed Gamba, Cerezo and Vissel to play the other teams maybe in that first three games, so maybe you can then get some fans in. If I know the dates they're aiming for, it seems speculative to me, but the 11th of July, then maybe fans could come in, so you could possibly have held off. But yeah, it's such a difficult thing, and you can't really second guess when the fans are allowed in. So yeah, I think they've done the best in a very difficult situation with the fixture scheduling.
Yes, indeed. So, Johnny, before I move on to my first major point, can I just ask, and I don't think this is too personal of a question, are you a season ticket holder at Gunma Osaka?
I'm not, actually. I work a lot of Saturdays. I actually am assistant manager at an English school, so I have slightly way to get away for maybe like a 7 o'clock summer kickoff, but if it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I can't really get away for those games, so... like I said to Sam, I'd almost kind of conceded. I might even not make a J1 game this season. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of more focused on, I might be able to get some tickets for some J3 games later on. So yeah, I'm not a season ticket holder to Gamba. It's the simple answer to that question.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I was gonna ask if you were, and once supporters are allowed back in the stadiums, Sam said, tentatively from the 11th. Of July. So yeah, if you were a season ticket holder and Gumba made those first 5,000 seats that they're, I think, allowed to open up from the 11th on, available for season ticket holders to buy, and you were able to enter a lottery to get one, again, this is all fictitious because you're not a season ticket holder, but if you were, and you had the option to apply to a lottery to get a ticket for the first game where fans would be allowed back in, would you enter that lottery to try and get a ticket to that game?
I probably would. My reasoning being that I think Panasonic Stadium obviously is like 40,000 fans, and I've been to quite a few, like the under 23 games, which is like 1,500 there. When the game is on and people are sitting down, social distancing is very easy in the stadium. It's more getting to and from the stadium. I don't know if any of the listeners have been to Panasonic Stadium before. It's right next to a massive shopping complex with restaurants, cinemas, aquarium, Ferris wheel, you name it. And the station that gets you there was built before that was built and before the stadium was built. So there would be a bit of congestion at the station, which I would potentially cycle there or maybe hang back and then get on a later train or something. I think inside the stadium itself, I wouldn't be too worried. It would be more the kind of surrounding areas.
Okay, fair enough then. All right, well, thanks for your first point, Sam. Mine is, it's along the lines of, how I answered Sam's first point, actually, about the proposed three groups of six clubs idea that we had bandied around in the lead-up, I guess, to the fixture list reveal. Well, that idea seems to have morphed into a north and east group of 10 clubs with Shimizu and Nagoya included, with the three Kansai teams, Hiroshima and the two Kyushu clubs, in a group of eight for the first six match days after the resumption that run until the end of July. So I haven't literally gone through and checked every single game for the first six games back, but from what I could tell from my limited research, it does appear that the clubs are split. They've basically cut the country in half. So basically from Shizuoka, from Shimizu west and south, there are eight clubs that make up that group of clubs that play amongst themselves for the first six match days back. And then there's the other 10, which obviously goes as far north as Sapporo and Sendai, and includes all of the Tokyo and Kanagawa area clubs. So that's all to run until the end of July. And then suddenly from the 1st of August, Sam, it's going to be magically okay for teams to travel the greater distances.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big crossing of fingers, isn't it? But I suppose that is going to have to happen at some stage, isn't it? You're going to have to cross the divide, as it would be. So I think given they think that they get supporters in at the 11th, they seem to have given themselves another couple of weeks leeway to get to have these kind of close distance games as they would be before opening it up. So I think in their minds they've left it as long as they can before doing these sort of treks across the country. But I just don't think there was any way around it, really. I mean, I think that what they've done is as good as they could have done. They've kept the travel, except for maybe for your Sapporo. I think that's the one issue that we've got in this situation, where they're obviously not going to be in Hokkaido for, I think it's the first four rounds that they have to be away. So I don't know if they're going to just base themselves in the Greater Kanto area or whatnot, and just have to have that first couple of weeks playing the games in and around Tokyo. But otherwise, that's the only thing that they've had to deal with. So I think, this situation, I think, is the only way they could have done it. And we've just got to cross our fingers that the situation doesn't get any worse in Japan, and that then at the 1st of April, it is fine for teams to start travelling greater distances.
Sure. Yeah, the 1st of August is, from Dan Olowitz's article rounding up the fixtures in the Japan Times, and oh my goodness, if anybody was put on earth to do a job, it's Dan Olowitz is put on earth to be the football writer for the Japan Times. Absolutely a power of work during all this, of course, Dan. So I'm probably referencing a lot of stuff from Dan's recent articles about the protocols and indeed the restart. But so Johnny, that weekend, the first of August, is proposed that the stadium capacities could be expanded to 50%, and away supporters would be allowed to attend in obviously limited numbers. So again, another hypothetical question: you get a weekend off work, or a fairly not so far to travel midweek evening game where you can travel away to watch Gumba. Would you be prepared to do that in the current climate?
I would probably put on the spot. I would probably have to say no. I'm currently still working from home, and I think I've been in a train once since March. And I kind of feel like, I know you guys and the guys in the other pod have talked a lot about how the G League's handled this very well. And obviously they've built in a lot of steps where they can kind of push things back. So I feel opening up the league with no fans makes a lot of sense. And then 5,000 or 50%, whichever is lower, makes a lot of sense. But then the jump from 5,000 to 50%, if you're like Shonan Bellmare or Yokohama FC, that's not many supporters. Whereas if you're like Yokohama F Marinos, that's like an extra 30,000 supporters potentially. Gamba Osaka's an extra 15,000. I think, was it today or yesterday, they just announced that Kanazaki and Langerak had just recovered from coronavirus. So you're talking about 6 weeks later, potentially then having like 30,000 plus in a stadium. I'm not so sure how that's going to work. I wonder what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I think I've got a different perspective, given I'm not in Japan, so I don't really know the exact extent of it. But I mean, speaking from being in England, I can't imagine there being a case where we could have 50% of fans in the ground here, at least for the rest of the year, maybe into next season. So it seems quite rushed, but I suppose the way they're doing it and all in these steps, it can all be assess at each point and think, okay, we've got the 11th of July, we don't think it's safe, we can push that back for another couple of weeks. So hopefully when it's not going to be set that on this day we're definitely doing this, and then we're definitely doing this later on, and we're definitely getting to 50%. So hopefully it can be assessed at that point. But yeah, it seems a little bit far-fetched in my opinion for them to be at 50% that quickly.
All right, well, we'll wait and see, obviously, how the situation develops, and, yeah, whether fans will be allowed back in what sort of numbers in the coming weeks. Obviously, we've got to get things up and running first before, we worry about supporters getting back into stadiums. But, there are obviously going to be thousands and thousands of people who are chomping at the bit to get back to watch their team live, even though the J-League is encouraging them to stay seated during the match and to refrain from leading chants, singing, clapping, waving scarves, or using megaphones. Again, quoting from Dan Ulowitz's piece on the J-League protocol. So, yeah, even when there are people back in there, I'm not really sure what sort of an atmosphere there's going to be, but, people will at least be able to sit down and watch football happen in front of them. Shall we move on to the next takeaway? So, Johnny, I've sort of eased you in here. Is there any sort of big picture takeaway from a Gunba Osaka perspective or a league-wide perspective that you would like to share after perusing the fixture list over the past day or so?
I've been quite busy at work today, so I don't have the same kind of overall perspective you guys have had. So if I could more focus on Gamba.
Of course, yeah.
I know, this kind of applies to everyone. I know from my notes, there's six games in July, I believe, J1 games, and then there's six J1 and two Levan Cup games in August. So you've got 14 games in the space of 2 months. And obviously with players like coming back from not playing, the chance of injury is quite high. So if you were to miss like one game, and that's like if you were to get injured, then you could potentially miss like 12 to 14 games just like that. So teams with smaller squads and also kind of more aging squads, I think could be a kind of bigger bigger risk. The kind of stat I was talking about in the green room with you guys regards Vissel Kobe. Thomas Vermaelen he's not played more than 14 league games in a league season since 2013, and him being such a rock at the heart of the Kobe defence, if he goes down in one game, they could potentially look at almost like a third of their season without him playing. So that's probably my kind of league takeaway. With Gamba, we've got Nagoya and Shimizu quite early, which I think with obviously the Nagoya coronavirus situation and Shimizu with the new manager taking time to bed in, I think that works quite well. And we also seem to have a tendency to get quite an easier run in at the end. So our final fixtures are Tosu home, Shonan away, Kobe home, Yokohama FC away, and Shimizu home. Obviously, Kobe is a tough game, but it is at home. Potentially looking at five winnable games. If Gamba were in a position to challenge, that's something I would kind of relish. But maybe kind of coming back to my earlier point about like injuries, I don't know if you guys had anything to add about that.
Yeah, it's a key point, and I think it's just been brought into focus today, actually, with the Yokohama F. Marinos goalkeeper Pagi Agu has just been ruled out for 2 months. So, obviously, that's 14 games, as you said, that he's missing. So, that's going to be very tough for them. I know they did without him in a couple of the Champions League games earlier in the season, but not necessarily great news to lose your first choice goalkeeper for so many games. And yeah, there are going to be so many players like Vermaelen, even Iniesta. Are you going to expect Iniesta at 36 to be playing 14 games in 2 months? I mean, he's very physically fit for a 36-year-old, but I mean, he's going to need rest at certain stages. You can't force him to play that many games. I think he's had so many breaks, actually, through injury during his time in Japan. So, yeah, that's key players that they're going to lose. That's going to be the case for a lot of the teams with more elder statesmen. I'm looking at Yokohama FC with their band of 41-year-olds. I don't think they're going to be playing too many games. So, that's going to be really difficult. And it's going to be who's got the greatest depth, who's got the greatest younger players that can play this. Like, I think Shonan could be a team that thrive in this, because they're based on a lot of 20, 21-year-old players that maybe not quality-wise, they're up to the standard of the rest of the league, but physically, they're going to be the ones that are going to be able to go week in, week out, so they might be a team that benefit from this. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how teams manage their squads. Are they going to say, well, for argument's sake, I'm sorry to Tosu fans, but if we're playing Sagan Tosu on Wednesday and we've got Yokohama F. Marinos on Saturday, are we just going to say we'll play a really weakened team against Sagan Tosu to focus on that other game? It's going to be, yeah, really interesting to see how managers and teams kind of come up against this fixture schedule.
Yeah, I was going to ask you later on, actually, Johnny, how you thought Miyamoto might handle things with the Gumba squad, and yeah, whether he might prioritise games here and there, as Sam's basically just mentioned. And obviously, Gumba have a numerical advantage, I guess, over a lot of other clubs because of the amount of players in your first team squad. Indeed, a lot of them are assigned to play to feature for the under 23s, and they're obviously going to have their hands full as well. But I mean, yeah, with your record of bringing through exceptional young players, I don't know if you want to give too many secrets away, but I'm sure there's a couple of youngsters either playing with the under 23s or even in the other youth group divisions of the club who might be banging on the first team door for a few appearances this year.
Yeah, for sure. Gamba and also Cerezo, having the under 23 teams, naturally have bigger squads, which I'm sure is going to help. I'm an English teacher, and one of my students today is actually a Sanfrecce fan. He's very fluent, so we often talk about football. And he was saying, like, Sanfrecce's starting 11 can match any other starting 11 in the league. But in terms of depth, he worries versus a team like, for example, Gamba or Yokohama F. Marinos, Kawasaki. So kind of coming back to the Gamba youth players, I made a little list of some of the players I kind of expect to come through, and I put them into four categories. The first one was Yuya Fukuda, who's obviously a name like followers of Japanese football will know. He's kind of broken into the team, but we're kind of hoping he'll kick on a bit. Can play like right wing, left wing, attacking midfield, central midfield. Very, very, very exciting player. In terms of, we've got two players came through from universities this year. There's Yuki Yamamoto, who's a central midfielder from Kansei Gakuin. He actually played alongside Ryu Takao, the defender, when they beat Gamba in the 2018 Emperor's Cup. So he came on as a sub against Kashiwa in the Levan Cup. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. And also Keisuke Kurokawa, who came from Kansai University. He's a left-sided defender. He played a couple of games last year as a designated special player. So hopefully he can kick on a bit. And then in terms of the guys from the under-23s, there's Ren Shibamoto, who's a kind of like deep-lying playmaker, similar to Endo. Riku Matsuda, who's the captain of the under-23s, is kind of like a right-sided centre-back. And Kohei Okuno, who was on the bench for the game against Yokohama F. Marinos. He's also played for Japan under-17 at the World Cup. He's a kind of box-to-box midfielder. And then to finish this rather long segment, there's Shoji Toyama. So a 17-year-old forward, scored 8 goals in 10 games for the under-23s last year. And Shuhei Kawasaki got 10 goals in 25 games for the under-23s. I don't know if they'll make the starting lineup this year, but they may even get on the bench or play in some of the Levan Cup games. But that's kind of my rundown on who's who in the Gamba youth system.
We spoke a lot with Alex last week, actually, about the Tokyo under-23s disbanding and how that might help Tokyo in their J1 campaign. So what would you have preferred to happen with the Gamba under-23s? Are you happy for them to continue this season? Or do you think Gamba could have made use of a lot more of those under-23s rather than having to split between the two squads?
It's a very, very good question, Sam. I think it's something we're only going to kind of find out later on. Again, if Gamba get a lot of injuries in the first team and these guys have been got match fit playing for the under-23s, it's going to come good. Before the start of the season, obviously there was 16 like professional clubs and 3 under-23 teams in J3. I questioned why the under-23 teams were there this year. Obviously, previous years it was kind of making up numbers, but they already had 16 teams. I'm not sure why they're still there. And there's also the potential with no relegation kind of further up the leagues that the Gamba and Cerezo will actually continue to be there next year, which is something that's not really been talked about. I don't really see a downside for Gamba to have the under-23 team and have that kind of pool of talent, because like Ben mentioned, there's also the kind of Gamba youth team, so they can get the kind of type 2 amateur players, for third year, second year high school students. So Gamba are not going to be short of players, for sure. They won't have the problems that other teams, for example, maybe a Sagan Toss might have.
Yeah, well, and I mean, heaven help the rest of us if you've got a new Yasuhito Endo coming through. I mean, we thought we were just about to see the back of this one, and now we've got another one ready to set in for the next 20 years. So, I mean, that's, yeah, well, that's obviously great news for Gamba supporters, but it's not great news for the rest of us, because Endo is an absolute icon, and, yeah, we're hoping things might calm down with Gamba for the next few years, but obviously, yeah, a new Endo coming through, then that is something definitely to look forward to. And I just wanted to go back, Johnny, sorry, and just mention that, yeah, you had mentioned, and thanks for doing that, that Mu Kanazaki and Mitch Langerak had got the all clear and that they have recovered and now tested negative for coronavirus. So that was absolutely terrific news. And, yeah, I'm sure everybody in the J-League community was absolutely ecstatic to see that news. So thanks for mentioning that, and I actually did mean to mention it a few minutes ago, but yeah, forgot to, but yeah, it's been referenced a couple of times, so just wanted to do it before we move on. And of course, we do have to hold our hands up, Sam, and apologise to Johnny and all the other Gamba supporters for not mentioning Ritsu Doan as an alumni of the Gamba under-23s. And I have to personally apologise to Alan Gibson for not getting a Doan mention in there last week, because, yeah, Doan was literally the first name that Alan mentioned when I asked him for some, key players from the history of the under-23s. And I think, Sam, yeah, probably you thought he hadn't really featured that much for the under-23s before he burst on the first team scene.
Well, that's going to be the excuse I'm going to use and stick to. It's not like he's a player that went on to play for a very good Dutch team or anything like that. It's not like he's done anything with his career. I'd much rather mention a guy who sat on the bench for Hart for a few games this season.
All right, fair enough then. All right, so I'm not sure about you, Sam, but I've got a couple of other major takeaways. So once again, I'll cede the floor to you if there's anything else that really caught your eye about the fixture list.
Well, I'd go with just, I thought it'd be worse, if I'd be honest. I thought we'd have, I've looked at it, there's only 8 Wednesday rounds. I say only 8, but there are 8 Wednesday rounds in J1, plus you've got the 2 left for the Levan Cup group stage, and then there are a couple more for the knockout fixtures. But I don't know why, but I thought it'd be a lot worse than that. It's still going to be horrendous, especially July and August. Looks like they're going to be really tough months. But there are gaps in the schedule where you can say, for example, I think John and Stuart have spoken about this a lot, where you usually will get a few games taken out with typhoons in the next couple of months or so. And I thought, well, how in the world are we going to fit these fixtures in? But there are Wednesdays available where these games can be played. So I think that was a pleasant surprise for me. And then the other thing, just on the scheduling, I'm a little bit surprised in the way that every game pretty much is on the same day. They haven't spread the fixtures out, and I thought they might do for TV purposes, because obviously, say, they've signed all these new deals abroad, to Optus in Australia, they've got it on Free Sports over here in the UK, and they must have had an agreement to show a certain number of games across a weekend. And now with everything on at the same time, at least in the UK, they'll only show the one game, whereas before they would have had 3. So I thought, just for that purposes, you might have had, there's no Friday football in J1 in these current fixtures. There's very rarely is it split half and half. I don't think it is at all, actually, split half and half between a Saturday and a Sunday, or a Tuesday and a Wednesday. So I was quite surprised by the kind of rigid nature of these kind of schedules, and I just thought from a TV perspective, you might have looked to take advantage of this and kind of spread the games out. So yeah, it was a bit weird in my opinion.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Sam. And once again, my extensive prep for this episode basically involved, writing out on a piece of paper the dates when all of these J1 match days are supposed to happen. And you're absolutely right. From the start of September, every single game from each match day is played on the same day, and that was That's really interesting. Obviously, I guess from a competitive balance side of things, you like to see that because you know that there won't be any teams on shorter rest or longer rest before a certain game is played. Obviously, as things get really grueling throughout, obviously once we start in July, it's already very hot, and August and September are likely to be brutal as they always are. But yeah, it's really interesting, and I think it's 8 Wednesdays and 1 Tuesday, isn't it? The first Tuesday in November when they run the Melbourne Cup. They also they're going to be playing J1 games, and Johnny, that is an interesting point from Sam, isn't it? And the fact that they've squeezed it all in, the J1 teams are going to be playing every weekend, mostly Saturdays, but every weekend, with the exception of the first weekend in November, the 7th, the Saturday is reserved for the Levain Cup final when FC Tokyo will face Gunma Osaka. apart from that, yes, the J1 teams are playing every single match day. Every single weekend. Sorry.
Yeah, I think, kind of coming back to both your points, if we're going to be in a prolonged situation where there's no supporters in the stadium and a lot of the spectators are going to be watching from home, I don't really understand why there's not more like staggered fixtures, even like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. For a variety of reasons, like Friday football in Japan doesn't really work in terms of people at the stadium. I'm not really sure what the TV figures are, but yeah, if people are being encouraged to stay home, stay safe, and not really go to stadiums, I don't really see the logic. I can see, obviously, if teams had to play Sunday, Tuesday versus Saturday, Tuesday, but then it's probably going to be balanced out the other end. So I'm not really sure where they're coming from with that.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Well, yeah, it's obviously two ways you can spin it. Yeah, I mean, I'm fairly happy with that, actually, from a competitive balance point of view. But yeah, I take your point, and obviously Sam's as well. And obviously, Sam, it would make your life a lot and your job a lot easier, I presume, if things were slightly more spaced out.
Yes, that's where I was coming from. I get all my work now piled into one day, and I've got a career on top of it, so I'd have loved a spread out fixture list, but yeah, the J-League gods weren't kind to me.
No, fair enough then. All right, well, I did reference the Levain Cup final there, so again, from Dan Olowicz's piece, I mean, this is readily available news, but I mean, Dan's basically put everything in black and white for us to digest in one very informative article. So yeah, about the Levain Cup in general first though, and Sam referenced it right back at the start, we have to issue a correction because we had assumed that the Levain Cup group stage would run as it usually does with six group stage games, each team in the 14 group playing home and away. But I mean, yeah, once again, applause to the J-League for being sensible and reducing the fixture list by cutting the group stage in half. So yeah, one group stage game has already been played, and the round robin, as it were, will conclude with the other group stage games, the match day 2 and match day 3, are coming on Wednesday nights in August. Of course, though, Matsumoto are excused from Group B. That means that Sendai and Urawa will have a midweek off when all of the other Levain Cup teams are scheduled to be in action, but of course the ACL teams will still be off then as well, we presume. Cerezo Osaka, also from Group B, have to play both of those teams, but yeah, Vegalta and Reds will have a midweek off. So yeah, the quarterfinals and semifinals of the Levain Cup will be on Wednesdays, September the 2nd and October the 7th, so they're going with the one-legged quarterfinals and semifinals, again cutting the knockout stage in half. And as I've already said, the 7th of November, a Saturday, will be the final, and that is, yes, the only weekend without scheduled J1 fixture. So yeah, guys, I guess once again, this is not a J-League celebration, a patting on the back party, but a sensible decision, Johnny, to basically cut the Levain Cup in half, you think?
Yeah, I don't really see that they had any other option. And obviously, the Levain Cup is a bit of a sore point for Gamba fans, as we played 12 games in the Levain Cup last year and didn't even make the final. And the two players we developed, Keito Nakamura and Ryotaro Mishino, very quickly left Gamba Osaka. So the fact that now you only have to play six games to win it, I think is a very, very positive step. The only downside from a Gamba perspective, we've lost our home game against Kashiwa already, and now we have away games to Shonan and Oita, so it's quite tough to see us progressing, but you never know.
Yeah, fair enough. So, and Sam, another thing we were looking out for was, potential midweek gaps in the schedule for Asian Champions League fixtures. As we know, the AFC have said they're determined to finish that competition in whatever form they ultimately decide it should be played in by some point in December, when the Club World Cup will hopefully be played in Qatar. So I guess from the start of October, I think there may be, let me look at it now again, as 1, 2, 3 midweeks in October and November. So things slightly open up for FC Tokyo, Yokohama, F Marinos and Kobe to take part in whatever form the ACL turns into if it is ultimately rescheduled.
Yeah, I mean, it's slightly opened up, but I think they've still got, is it 4 group games left for most of the teams, and some haven't even played any fixtures, and so you can get that, and you can maybe get your group games in, but you still then got the round of 16 if they're keeping it two-legged, which they probably won't, but that then makes it difficult. Well, who gets the home leg? And yeah, so there's still too many fixtures for me for them to be able to fit the ACL in. I know they're going to try, but I still don't see it. And I think they kind of, if they're going to, they have to get it up and running, maybe take advantage of these when the Levan group, the Levan Cup group games are on, and maybe Yokohama, Tokyo and Kobe can play on the 5th of August and the 12th of August if that works out with the other teams in their group. But I mean, it's not looking particularly positive in China. I know there's been a bit of a spike in Beijing, so that doesn't look necessarily like Chinese football's going to return anytime soon. So I think they're going to have to come to a decision fairly quickly on how feasible this is. I know they want to continue it, but I don't see it, to be honest. It's not going to happen. I'd be very, very surprised.
Yeah, well, I guess they might go as drastic as the J-League have done with the Levain Cup and just cut the group stage in half and just say that there's one game each between the clubs. Obviously, there's a massive disadvantage compared to, you know, just travelling from one part of Japan to the other in the Levain Cup group stage to literally travelling from one country to another and missing out on home advantage some clubs would miss out for two of their group stage games, obviously. But, desperate times call for desperate measures, so the AFC might be considering a plan like that as well. Johnny, I said we might get you out of here before midnight, but that's certainly not happening because, I've got two more points for us to discuss, and I don't know how many more you guys have got. So let's move on. And my next one is, again, something that we talked about last week, Sam, and it's the proposed international breaks in October and November. We wondered whether the J-League would just go ahead and schedule their match days in and around those international breaks, and indeed they have gone ahead and done so. Again, those dates are not confirmed by the AFC, I don't believe, but they intend to play World Cup qualifiers on the 8th and 13th of October and the 12th and 17th of November. Well, the J-League have scheduled match days 21 and 22 around those dates in October. And indeed, match day 27 falls a smack bang in the middle of those two November international dates. So, Johnny, last week Sam was concerned at the prospect of this, as it means that Hajime Moriyasu will almost certainly have to choose an entirely foreign-based squad. I mean, he can certainly come up with a squad of 23 players who could do a job for Japan. But as Sam said, there's certainly a lot of players, a lot of domestic-based players that would have benefited, I'm sure, a great deal by being, featured for Japan in these group stage games against the likes of, again, no disrespect intended, Myanmar and Mongolia, Tajikistan, etc., where they could have cut their teeth at the international level. And it looks like that, some of those players who might have been on the fringe for the national team are going to be denied that opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. I think probably the main point I would make about that, we're only in June now, so with this situation, it's impossible to see where we'll be in November. I kind of follow Sam's line of scepticism when it comes to like Asian Champions League or Asian qualifiers. If we're still at a stage where the Kansai teams can't play the Kanto teams until August, I'm struggling to see how we can have like Japan versus Tajikistan in November. And then you're also relying on other countries and in Europe, for the World Club Cup, how's the European Champions League going to finish? How is coronavirus going to develop in other countries? Obviously, if we imagine hypothetically that the games do go ahead, then we still have to consider, are European leagues going to be on? Are they going to be in the same schedule as the Japanese league? In which case, if they're playing three times a week, would they be calling up the European players, or would they be playing potentially even university players from Japan against some of these weaker teams? It's such a unique situation. It's really hard, I think, to make a prediction. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, it is. As you say, it's very difficult to actually pin down what the situation is going to be like. And would would Japan national team, would they take precedence over the league and just call up players anyway? And then you could have situations, say on this match day, Kashiwa Reysol against Vissel Kobe. Could Kobe be going into that game without Kyogo Furuhashi because he's been called up by Japan and they take precedence because they're building to a World Cup? It's going to be interesting to see what kind of give and take there is between teams. Maybe at that stage of the season, certain teams aren't necessarily fighting for the title, so they just say, yeah, it's fine, we can allow our player to go and play for the national team. So it's going to be just see what the situation is like in October and then in November. But, yeah, it's going to be a weird one to work around.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, yeah, everything is so up in the air. It's, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone what's going to happen in October and November. But, I would like to... obviously, I would like to see some of these domestic-based players get the chance in these sort of games. But again, you can understand why the J-League have just gone ahead and scheduled these matches anyway. Because as you say, Johnny, there is a massive amount of uncertainty and they can only go with what they know. And try and lessen the load as much as they can. And that's basically impossible at this stage of proceedings, I realise. But by limiting the amount of midweeks they've scheduled and, trying to keep it as much as they can on weekends. So, weekends just happen to fall in between these international breaks, as of course they always do. And, if they were not to schedule them now later on the internationals were cancelled, then, would take even more, even more manpower to shift the dates and if they suddenly became available. So I guess I can understand why they've done it, and I don't want to sound like a shill for the J-League, but I've gradually come around to realise how difficult this has been for them the entire time, and it is definitely a marathon and a sprint, but I think they've done as well as they can and as well as could be expected, basically. And again, little things like cutting the Levain Cup in half, I think they have to be given plaudits for. So, Sam, do you have any more major takeaways? I've got one more, so I'm happy to take it away. But if you've got anything else, or indeed, Johnny, if you've got anything else before we gradually begin to wrap things up, I say, before this podcast goes for another 25 minutes.
Well, that's points, maybe. I don't know if that counts, but I was just going to look at the opening round and the opening fixtures that we've got coming up on July the 4th. I think because of the way it's been framed and you've got these regional games, so a lot of derbies or quite sort of derbies in there. So it's just a really exciting round of fixtures to get underway with. The Osaka derby, fantastic. Reds v Marinos, great game. We talked about Kashima versus Tokyo last week, could be a really exciting fixture. Kawasaki and Kashima, you've got two teams that have been fighting for the title for the last 3 or 4 years. So those some really exciting games on paper, and you get that right at the start of the season. We don't have any easing into it at all. You've got derby games, you've got really big fixtures coming thick and fast at the start. So just from a fan perspective, and I would like these to be to be spread out a little bit more so I could watch them all, but even so, fantastic sets of fixtures for fans to get excited about at the start of the season.
I tell you what, you've done absolutely brilliantly there, Sam, because there was actually a late Patreon question from Gabrielle Anello asking for the best game of the first match day in J1, and it came through quite late and I wasn't able to send it to you, but you've basically just you just answered it for us. So I don't know if you have some sort of telepathy with Gabrielle or not, or whether I actually sent it to you and I didn't realise I'd done it, but yeah, you've done absolutely tremendously there. So obviously, Johnny, for you, all eyes are going to be on the Panasonic Stadium. It's an absolute corker, and yeah, you would have loved to be there. Perfect world, you know, no work and you know, being able to go in the first place. But yeah, for Gumba and indeed Cerezo supporters, it doesn't get any bigger, and yeah, it comes in the first game of the resumption.
Yeah, it's an easy way to get the fans back into it. I think it was a couple of weeks ago I asked you guys the question about like how will having no supporters in the stadium affect things, and Sean Carroll gave a really good answer, basically saying that the good teams might become even better. I think, like, if Team A is better than Team B, then with no supporters, I think Team A is more likely to win. With Gamba and Cerezo, though, it's really difficult to pick. Gamba have a much stronger attack, whereas Cerezo have a very strong kind of defence and a defensive midfield. And actually, I know running a Gamba blog, it might be strange to say this, Cerezo could be a real dark horse this year. I feel the style of play they have, they're very, very difficult to beat. They don't use a ton of energy, don't concede many goals. I think they could be thereabouts this year. So if Gamba can get anything from that game, then potentially going like 4 or 6 points from two games against Yokohama F. Marinos or Cerezo, that would be a brilliant start to the season for us. And yeah, it's only just turned midnight, so we're now into the 17th of June, so... that's what, 2.5 weeks I have to wait. So, yeah, I can't wait for that one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely terrific. And, yeah, you're right, Sam. There's absolute corkers all over the fixture list. And, yeah, points of interest about every single game. It's obviously, yeah, with the teams based regionally for the time being, it's, you're guaranteed to... get a few corkers. But, yeah, it seems like they've engineered things really well. And obviously, yeah, Kawasaki starting with Kashima at home and then going to FC Tokyo in the week. It's going to be big start for Frontale as they look to regain their crown, of course. But yeah, so many interesting fixtures in the restart round. But obviously, we'll be covering that in the lead up to the resumption in a little bit more detail. And once again, Gabrielle, thanks for your question. I don't know how you managed to get it to Sam, but it's Sam's answered it terrifically well, and good to hear from Johnny as well on the Osaka Derby. And Gabrielle, thanks for your kind words as well at the end of the message. All right, well, my final point was about Sapporo's fixture list. And Johnny, you won't have seen this, I'm sure. I'm sure you haven't scrolled through every single team's fixture list, yeah. And I wouldn't expect you to. And I kind of came across this by accident because, obviously there were rumours going around that Sapporo might be based in the Kanto area in the first month or so after the restart. And indeed, Sam's referenced it earlier, and that's why I left it to my final point of my major takeaways, because I'm hoping the listeners would have forgotten that Sam referenced it earlier. But yeah, basically, Sapporo are not at home in this season until match day 6. Of course, they started away from home, and obviously we didn't know any better in match day 1, and that's I'm not suggesting there was any kind of conspiracy against Sapporo that they were drawn away in match day 1, but they were, and they played away at Kashiwa, of course, and lost 4-2. But yeah, once things are up and running again, they are away at Yokohama FC, Kashima, Shonan and Sendai before they finally get to grace the hallowed turf of the Sapporo Dome in match day 6 when they host FC Tokyo. So it appears that one team always gets the short straw when it comes to fixturing, Sam. Last year, obviously, it was FC Tokyo and their huge road trip around the Rugby World Cup. Of course, they were scheduled to have another of those this year due to the Olympics. But yes, it appears this year it's Consadole, as I said, the first four games away. They do have stretches of games throughout the year, and indeed, once they play at home against Tokyo, they then play 5 of their next 6 at home. So it does kind of balance out. And throughout the season, they do have stretches of games where they play two or three at home consecutively. But, I mean, the payoff comes at the end of the year when they play five of their final six, including their last three away from home. So, I mean, Sam, this is the unanswerable question, but why on earth would they have bothered to do that? I mean, I understand the front loading of away fixtures for Sapporo with the with not wanting to have them travel down week by week from Hokkaido, and indeed having opposition teams travel up there. But yeah, once we're all the way down in late November and early and mid December, why would there be a need to schedule so many Sapporo games away, do you think?
Well, I don't know for certain, but I'm going to guess that it has to do with the use of the Sapporo Dome. And maybe if the baseball fixtures have been tampered with, that affects when Sapporo can use the Dome. And then, because in the summer they'll play some away games at Tsubasa Park Stadium, but maybe when it gets towards the winter, if you're looking at October, November for those games, then maybe up in Hokkaido it's not necessarily okay to play at, like, maybe it's a bit too cold, the threat of snow, anything like that. The dome isn't usable at that time, and you can't, they can't get into the dome, and that's why these fixtures are the way they are, because if you're going to play home games in late November up in Hokkaido, then maybe if the dome's not available, the Asabetsu Park Stadium isn't available, so they couldn't play those games outdoors at home late November. So that's the only thing I can think of, but yeah, the fixture list, it's cruel in many respects to Sapporo. You can't get off to a fast start with a lot of home games. You end the season away from home where you, especially the last three games, you've got that midweek game just before the end of the season as well. So they've got to travel down to Yokohama, then they've got to travel across to Hiroshima. So it's not very fair, I suppose, in that respect, but maybe they've just got to really take advantage of that stretch of home games they've got in the middle of the season.
All right, then. And apologies to the listeners there if, Sam's answer cut out. My Skype just crashed for about 15 to 20 seconds. Hopefully I've been able to stitch Sam's answer back together in the editing bay. But if not, the fault is my computer's. Nothing to do with Sam and his answer to the question there about Sapporo. So, okay, we're hitting the home straight here, listeners. But before we do, Johnny, you actually sent through a question on Patreon to Sam and myself this afternoon, and you're now here on the podcast to pose it yourself.
Yes, so thank you for that. My question to Ben and Sam was, so obviously we've gone through the brutal nature of the schedule, and there's no relegation this year, so we can expect to see like a lot of younger players who may not have got quite as much of a chance as they will have this year, getting to play regularly. So which players should we look out for? Who's going to make an impact on this year's J-League, do you feel?
Yeah, this is one of the things I'm most looking forward to for this season. There should be a lot of time dedicated to younger players to come through and get the chances that, say, Gamba have provided younger players throughout the last couple of seasons. Then Gamba might be quite happy that they can't play their younger players so early in the year so that the European clubs don't take them all in the summer. But yeah, there's lots to look out for. I think I've just got a list of a few here. I'm thinking that Cerezo Osaka, you've got Jun Nishikawa. He's kind of been linked with Barcelona tentatively in the last couple of years. He played a bit in J3 last season. He's played a handful of games for the senior team, so he should get a lot more game time, just playing in behind the striker. And last week we talked about Shuto Abe and Kazuya Kono at FC Tokyo. Terrific young players, dynamic. If Kazuya Kono comes anything like Nakajima, as was referenced by Alex last week, then that's going to be really exciting to watch. Kashima have got young players that they're going to have to knit together in this their new format under the new manager. But Ryotaro Araki really impressed me in pre-season. He's another typical Japanese player, if you like, in that number 10 role. Very silky, great technique, that sort of player. So he's one to watch out for. Yuta Matsumura is another young player at Kashima. Then Kawasaki have brought in a few players, these kind of, they were specially designated players that played for, well, Karuma Toma and Ryo Hatate have played for the under-23s for Japan a lot. They're quite experienced as these young players go, but not necessarily in J-League terms. So, yeah, terrific. Mitoma, I think, is the pick of the bunch at Kawasaki. Then, yeah, just going through the teams, there's Makoto Okazaki, we mentioned last week, the young Tokyo defender who's gone on loan to Shimizu and had been in pre-season, has kind of been playing in midfield. So it's going to be interesting to see how he adapts to the new system at Shimizu and the kind of Ange ball, Klamovsky ball, whatever it might be. So, yeah, he's another good young player. And a couple of left-footers, I'd say. I like a left-footed wing, like a winger or whatnot. Shunki Higashi at Sanfrecce Hiroshima, again, played Champions League football last season, a few Levan Cup games, a few in the league as well. He's another very technically gifted player. Shonan, as I mentioned earlier, have a lot of these young players, a lot got game time last season, but I think just in the first game of the season we saw Tochi Suzuki on the left-hand side. His delivery was incredible for a couple of goals there, so he should get a lot more game time this season. Let's go to Sendai. I've got Hiroto Yamada, who is on loan from Seretse Osaka. He had a year in J2 with FC Ryukyu last season, and I mean, he should be getting chances at Sendai. I mean, if they're going to play Shun Nagasawa again, I'm going to be furious. I had to get him in. So hopefully Yamada gets a lot of game time. And then Charlie Houghton would be furious with me if I didn't mention his beloved Koki Saito at Yokohama FC. They've got a lot of good, mixed in with their pensioners, they've got some good, really good young players at Yokohama FC. And without the threat of relegation, they should be able to play those and get them J1 experience. So they should be a really exciting one to watch. And the last one is sprightly young fella. I think he's only about 53, but we should see a bit more of Kazumura this year. So with no pressure on him, he should be banging in the goals. I expect at least one this season.
Terrific answer. Well, I certainly can't add anything to that, Johnny. I hope you're satisfied with that answer. That was absolutely terrific work by Sam.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sam. And I'd written down Araki and also Tochi Suzuki from Shonan. A couple of names, actually, you didn't mention. The one live game I've actually seen this year was Gamba against Kashiwa Reysol. And Kashiwa's left-back, Taiyo Koga, I believe he's played for Japan in the East Asian Cup. He had a very, very good game that day. And also Yuta Kamiya, I think you guys have mentioned before. He was a Shonan Belmare player. I think he was on loan to Ehime for the last 2 years. He was a very good player. Maybe less fashionable. Tosu, kind of by nature, they're being forced to play young players. Daiki Matsuoka, he played a lot last year when he was still a high school student. And also Fuchi Honda started in midfield for them. I believe they're both 19. They both started the first game, but they drew away to Kawasaki. So I thought they were a couple of players potentially to watch as well. But I've written down all your lists, and I 100% agree with everyone you had on that list there.
I'd echo what you say on Kamiya. He played in J1, I think, when he was like 17 for Shonan and was terrific. And then, well, for whatever reason, went out to Ehime, but was very good there as well. And he really deserves his move up to Kashiwa. He's kind of developed more into a winger. He was previously like a central midfielder. But yeah, he's very adaptable, terrific player. And Matsuoka as well was a diamond in very much the rough in Sagan Tosu. So yeah, looking forward to seeing him again.
Yeah, so, Johnny, you obviously referenced some of the names earlier, coming through at Gamba Osaka. So, without repeating yourself, if there's one that you're looking forward to see come through in 2020, who is it? Who do you think could be the next Ritsu Doan, the next Ryotaro Meshino, etc.?
Probably, if I had to pick one diamond, it's Shoji Toyama. So he, like, 16 years old last year, scored 8 goals in 10 games, including, it's actually my Twitter page, I shared a hat-trick against Fukushima, and some of the composure he showed with those goals, like, you don't even see that from, like, people 10, 15 years older than him. He was in the Japan squad, the 2017 World Cup last year. He really looks like full-time training this year with, like, Usami, Patrick, Adamilson, Kazuma Watanabe. I think he's someone we could definitely see playing for the Japan national team in the kind of coming years.
All right, terrific stuff. And another one to keep your eye on coming through at Gamba Osaka. It's very much a production line and, absolutely tremendous. One of the best youth systems, obviously, it goes without saying, in all of Japan. All right, well, Johnny, it's been absolutely terrific to have you join us. A storming debut, I must say. And, before we let you go, do fill our listeners in on your blog and what you might have coming in the weeks before the restart. I know you'd gone to a lot of work to put together a full J1 preview before everything got going. So will you be updating that perhaps, or yeah, doing a little bit of work to preview the Gumba season in particular before it restarts?
Yes, thanks very much again, Ben. So you can find me on Twitter at @bloggamba. So I did a two-part preview back in February. That's still on my blog that you can find on the Twitter page. I'm going to be updating that preview. I'm planning to have that out on the 29th of June, like the week before it all kicks off again. I've sort of previewed that already on my Twitter. Also kind of plugging something I've done with Jeff Osborne, like at Okinawa Aussie. He's run a great series of articles, like kind of similar to the Who Are You did for the Patreons. And we kind of got talking, and I decided the final one, I would interview him. So I'm planning to post that around lunchtime on Sunday. We're still working on a couple of things, but there'll be a bit of banter between us about Rukyu and Gamba, and a chance to get to know one of the kind of central figures in the J-League English scene on Twitter.
Oh, that's absolutely outstanding. I very much look forward to checking that out. And, Jeff, once again, mate, I'm really sorry I didn't get to your question a couple of weeks ago, and I'm still really disappointed about it. So sorry, mate. But, really looking forward to your chat with Johnny, and that's absolutely tremendous stuff. So, fantastic, Johnny, as I said, to have you on the podcast for the first time. And, look forward to doing so again. Now, Sam and I have to work out how we're going to record a podcast with all these match days coming thick and fast. But, we'll be sure to check in with you, once everything's up and running as we check in with Gumba Osaka. So, tremendous stuff on your debut. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much, and also thank you to both of you. I know it's obviously been very tough having 3-4 months without any kind of games to talk about, but you've really helped me like fill in my time like after work, and I'm sure all the other listeners would say very much the same. So thank you both very much for having me on, and hopefully I can come back on again at some point in the future.
Oh, absolutely, no question. You're in the rotation, Johnny. So, yes, indeed. And thanks very much for those kind words. It's very, very nice of you to say. And, Sam, outstanding from you as always. And as I'm about to tell the listeners, you're having your next week off. So get your feet up, get some K-League watched, and, we'll reconvene in 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, thank you for the break, boss. We'll be back refreshed hopefully in the lead up to the return of the J-League fixtures.
All right, then. That is it for the J-Talk podcast for another week. Next week, we'll be taking a break from our regularly scheduled programming to bring you one of our Patreon-exclusive pods, one that fans of the J-League, both new and old, will really get a kick out of, I'm sure. So on this episode, thanks again to Johnny Nicol and, of course, to you for listening wherever you are. I'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.